Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. It's Brett Ford here with Scott Chu, and special thanks to MC Drum. MC Drum helping us out with an intro and outro music just to liven things up, the new sound. Special thanks to Ben Brown, pitcher list and QB list staffer, that it's his brother's actually MC Drum, and that's who connected us for the collaboration. We're happy to, you know, have him liven us up with some new sound. So that's what you're hearing now. Scott, how are we feeling this week?
You know, not so bad. The Tigers have been fine, which is good. I'll take that. And I was in Pittsburgh all week for work, and I'm home now. That's the biggest thing. How you doing, man?
Things are good. Things are rolling along. We've got real baseball to watch for the past 10 days or so. It's been, gosh, it feels like an avalanche of baseball after just an off season of waiting. But it's a good problem to have. A lot of stuff to sort through, but happy to be doing it. Let's jump right in. We'll go to news and notes. Unfortunately, our friend Jurickson Profar, Atlanta Braves outfielder, suffered a 80-game suspension. He was caught with some PEDs after really a breakout season last year with the Padres, and now first thing this year he's caught with some stuff that he shouldn't be having. Can anything else go wrong for Atlanta in the early stages of this year?
I mean, they could certainly try, right? Like, they could lose a guy on the infield too. It's a bummer for Jurickson Profar. We weren't entirely sure what we expected from Jurickson Profar this season, but we know that, like, what's going to happen while he's out is going to be some rotation of Brian De La Cruz and Stuart Fairchild right now. At some point, you imagine that Alex Verdugo is going to get in the mix, at least until Ronald Acuna Jr. comes back. The problem is, I just don't care about any of those guys for fantasy. Maybe if one of them locks down the job and looks good, but like Brian De La Cruz isn't it, Stuart Fairchild isn't it. This whole roster is kind of, you know, been underperforming for the early part of the season. Some of that is just like, it's been two series. There's not really a whole lot to that. I am a little interested to see what happens with Drake Baldwin. You know, is a high level prospect, but was off to a slow start results wise. Although the process looked pretty good. The plate discipline was good. He was hitting the ball hard. We already knew he could do that. He had some barrels. He was doing everything right. Just, you know, the results didn't quite get to where he wanted to go. A lot of that just being a lot of balls to center and the opposite way, not a lot of stuff to the pull field. So we'll see if they send him down or if they just let him be the backup catcher. Either way, for single catcher fantasy wise, I'm not interested in a part-time catcher like that.
Yeah, and especially with his defensive struggles, I think the Padres kind of really exploited him when he was behind the plate in the season opening series. The Braves did acquire Jason DeLay, like you were saying, from the Pirates, a guy with major league experience, not necessarily anybody that should be fantasy relevant, but like you said, Sean Murphy coming back might change things a little bit in as far as playing time goes behind the plate for Atlanta. Former Brave Freddie Freeman, he had a shower mishap and is on the 10-day DL. I'm sure there's a punchline there somewhere, but this is a family-friendly network, so we're not gonna dive into that. Scott, is the Dodgers lineup even going to feel the absence of Freeman?
I mean, sure, they might only win by 3 instead of 5 a couple nights. It shifts some guys around in the lineup. You know, we'll see guys like Conforto and Smith and Edmund move up, which is, you know, interesting. It doesn't really change anything. I'm maybe interested in Conforto a little more. Like, if he's truly the everyday hitter in like the number 4 spot, like, sure, man, let's do it. Otherwise, you know, there's not really, you know, this gives Kike Hernandez a chance to play, but that doesn't really matter for us mixed league folks. And there's no one on the bench I'm really that interested in either. This is just a matter of wait and see. Hopefully Freeman can just get healthy, come back, and be the, you know, rock solid first baseman we want him to be.
Well, another injury to another early round fantasy baseball bat. Ketel Marte is headed to the IL with a strained hamstring. D-backs pulled him from a game earlier this week. Anybody in Arizona that you're looking to maybe fill in there?
Well, I think we had all really hoped it'd be Jordan Lawler, but the organization would really like to wait on him. So they called up a guy, Tim Tawa. Tawa had a nice season in the minors last year. He hit 31 home runs, 14 steals, hit 279. The stat I look for, by the way, when you're looking at these minor league guys, if you can get the WRC plus, that's really what you want because it gives you a better frame of reference for what it's like at that level. Some of these divisions in AA and AAA are really hitter friendly. Some of them are very pitcher friendly. So the stats don't quite equate. So using that WRC plus, which for him last season across the minors was 133. I mean, he showed well enough to be able to play. I'm not that interested again, outside of like only leagues and things like that, but you know, he's going to hit at the bottom of the lineup and we're not ready for Lawler yet. That's Jordan Lawler, high level prospect. He's had a lot of injuries the last few years. He's the one that when he's finally called up, I think it's going to be actionable in a lot of leagues, but Tim Tawa is more of just a dynasty and dynasty and only league sort of guy. And even in dynasty, he's a little bit limited, a little worried about how that hit tool is going to look in the majors.
Oh, we move from the desert to the DMV, the Orioles, with a couple of transactions. Outfielder Colton Cowser suffered a broken thumb in the first series of the year. He's out 6 to 8 weeks, opening up some at-bats in the outfield. Meanwhile, shortstop Gunnar Henderson is back in action as of Friday. What are you thinking with the Orioles lineup and how things may shift there with those two transactions?
Yeah, so, Cedric Mullins had been leading off and I really like him in that leadoff spot. It appears they're moving him to just the heart of the order now, which is fine. You're just trading some runs for RBI. So I like that there. I think it works out. Gunnar Henderson, of course, he's going to hit the top of the lineup. He's going to be great. If he has a slow start, don't worry about it. He's still Gunnar Henderson. He just needed a little bit of extra time. So this isn't necessarily something I expect to be a lingering problem. I really do think he's ready to go. So as far as the rest of the lineup goes, no real changes, right? Like it's all the same guys. In the outfield, I guess, it mixes up a little bit with Cowser. Heston Kjerstad would be really interesting if he can really find his power stroke, but I think they're going to platoon the heck out of that outfield. Tyler O'Neill will play when he's healthy, which, is a big question mark how often that will be. Otherwise, you're going to have Kjerstad. You're going to have Ramon Laureano. You're going to have if Kjerstad wins the job outright, I think he's interesting in 12 team leagues. I think unless that happens, I really don't care about the rest of the outfield outside of Tyler O'Neill and Cedric Mullins.
Yeah, and the Orioles, speaking as an Orioles fan, so take this with a grain of salt, but they feel like they came into the season with all this momentum, and they're one injury away from completely breaking down, is just the way it seems with Baltimore. Gunnar Henderson coming back is great. Cowser being out kind of stinks, but this lineup can produce runs, and the pitching staff is just super inconsistent right now. So it's very curious to see what's going to happen there in Baltimore. Last news and note here, Dodgers acquire Estiuri Ruiz. Ruiz stole 63 bases in 2023 rather. He was in AAA for most of last year. Is this a guy to maybe put on our watch list now that he's with the Dodgers organization?
Well, he has this condition that's really bugged him throughout his major league career. It's called not being able to hit. I think that's really something to keep an eye on. I'm not sure there is an answer to that. It's just, he can't hit major league pitching. He can run, he can beat major league catchers, but he can't beat major league pitchers. There's always been times where people wanted to break out, but let's be clear. The Oakland A's weren't interested in starting him. The A's, like, not a team known for its current depth. Right. They start a lot of guys you've never heard of, and they did not have room for Estiuri Ruiz. So, that's where we are on him. Again, very, very deep league if you want to chase steals, but I'm not convinced he even appears in 10 games.
Well, that's it for news and notes this week. We'll be back as we dive into some bigger news stories, including touching on some torpedo bat sample sizes. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. It's Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. And Scott, we've got a lot to talk about. The first couple weeks of baseball has dropped us with a couple huge pieces of news. And seemingly the thing that's getting the most hype so far is these torpedo bats, where they've taken and remolded the shape of the Major League Baseball bat, putting more wood into parts where hitters are making more contact, which makes all the sense in the world. And we're seeing some dividends of that. Some hitters are seeing a distinct change in their barrel rates year over year. Obviously, very small sample sizes. But what are your thoughts on the torpedo bat and kind of the way that it's changed some of these guys for the better or for the worse?
So I've gotten to see some numbers. And number one, to understand, the torpedo bat is just trying to move where the barrel is, right? Like, where's the sweet spot? To really, both those words are stats, but that's not what I mean. It's trying to find that perfect spot to make contact, and it's just trying to move it. It moves it about 2 inches up towards the label. The logo's on the bat, so it moves it closer to the end of the bat. And that's all it actually does, is it just moves the barrel over. So it's not like this cheat code for every hitter in baseball who can just start packing wood in some part of the bat. In fact, most hitters are not really good candidates for the torpedo bat, because if you already barrel up the ball quite well, if you already hit the ball on the bat where you want, torpedo bat doesn't do anything for you. It just now gives you a thing that wants you to hit it on a different part of the bat. So again, guys like Chisholm and Volpe, it's worth noting that Nestor Cortes was throwing batting practice to them. So they could have used a wiffle ball bat and probably hit it pretty hard. But it's an interesting thing. You see these barrel rates, because that's what it's trying to do. It's trying to say, hey, this guy, he has a very specific problem. It's that he hits the ball a little too close to the end of the bat instead of exactly where we want him to. So why don't we just adjust his bat so that the best part of the bat is this place where he keeps hitting it, right? It's conceptually, it's like, hey, this pitcher always misses 3 inches outside. So why don't I just bring the glove in 3 more inches and let's see if that gets him to hit the corner, right? And like, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's all they're really trying to do here, is they're just shifting the barrel, right? Because it, again, worth noting, regular player is going to hit the ball where they want to hit it. And that's no longer like a sweet part of the bat. Now it's like this sort of dead part of the bat because of the way they've shifted the wood around. I think we may see a little bit more of this as we go, right? But again, it's not a cheat code. It's a very specific solution to players with a very specific problem.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of fascinating that so many Yankees had adopted this bat, this equipment change. You know, Volpe makes a ton of sense based on kind of his swing profile and the way he was really getting jammed more often than not. And from what I've read, it was kind of an Anthony Volpe issue that has kind of picked up within the clubhouse, and other guys are trying it, other guys are liking it. So I was surprised at the kind of the universal adoption. When I say universal adoption, really, it's only been 4 or 5 Yankees in the lineup. Aaron Judge has come out and said, I don't want this. I swing just fine. And Aaron Judge, you're right. You do swing just fine. You do hit the ball just fine.
Yeah.
You don't.
This makes him worse. The torpedo bat makes Judge worse. And it doesn't, it doesn't fix timing problems. It doesn't fix contact problems. It specifically addresses quality of contact for players because they're hitting the ball a little too high up on the bat.
Right. So for those of you who missed it, there's a handful of players in the league who are using them. I'll run down the list real quick just for reference sake, and then we'll move on. It's Jazz Chisholm, Anthony Volpe, Cody Bellinger, Paul Goldschmidt, and Austin Wells, all from the New York Yankees. Ellie De La Cruz, Alec Bohm, Adley Rutschman, all using the torpedo bat. O'Neill Cruz, Dansby Swanson, Jose Trevino, Ryan Jeffers, Junior Caminero, and Francisco Lindor. As of April 3rd, those were the reported players using the torpedo bats. Most of them had seen an increase in barrel rate in the, again, super small sample size from 2025 over their 2024 rates. Some of them had seen a decrease. And like Scott said, it's a very specific fix for a very specific problem. It is not a universal Band-Aid that will just fix everyone's swing. So take all this torpedo bat hype with a grain of salt, as most of you, I'm sure, have done. And it is very overhyped. Let's move on to your hitters list, something that's not overhyped. Scott's top 150 hitters. It's been updated on April 3rd after 1.5 weeks of baseball. Scott, what are the things that you've seen, kind of a blanket statement about what you've seen as far as the hitters go, and what you're most looking forward to coming up in this next week of baseball?
It is hard to do these lists this early in the season because, again, and something I said, you know, every show we've had so far, all that work you did in the offseason, you don't throw it away yet, right? The evaluations you did. Now, what has changed are roles. That's the biggest thing that changes right now. I think a good player to talk about that with is Luis Garcia Jr., who I think we all thought was just everyday number three hitter for the Washington Nationals. They sign Ahmed Rosario, and we think, meh, it's Ahmed Rosario, right? Like, he's around, but he'll kind of pitch in all over. And it looks like a true platoon. It looks like they want him in against lefties and they want Luis Garcia Jr. on the bench. And so it's still a large side platoon. But when you were looking at a guy as like the seventh or eighth second baseman off the board, your everyday locked in starter, and now all of a sudden he's the large side of a platoon, it hurts a bit. Now, thankfully, it's at second base where we were kind of in the wash anyway. At that point, there's a lot of depth there. But again, it makes a big difference. So that was like a role I think we didn't quite expect. But for things like Rafael Devers, right? Like, did I slide him down a bit in the tier? Sure, he looked terrible. But like long term, I don't think anyone was thinking that. Like, I will change guys' ranks. It is very hard for me to say, okay, you're not in this tier anymore, right? Like, I'll shift you around because guys in the same tier tend to be pretty close anyway. And I won't argue with people for shuffling him around. So, you know, I'll slide him down a little bit because, you know, hey, maybe it was his shoulder, maybe something like that. It doesn't look like it, right? He's been better. He was good today on Sunday. Things are looking much, much better, but I'll move them around in a tier. But yeah, moving guys, especially close to the top of the list, more than a couple spots within their own tier, it's just impossible because all that work we did, like nothing is truly like proven true or false right now. But more importantly, like if you had a strong belief on draft day, it's going to be very hard to have a week and a half worth of action at a time when what's the league leader in plate appearances coming in today? Like 30, right? Like it's a tiny number. We don't even, you know, the earliest stats that quote unquote stabilize or become reliable in a sense, right? Before, I think the better word there is meaningful. When these numbers become meaningful, pretty much none of them become meaningful before 50 plate appearances. Like there's a couple, right? Like max exit velo. Like if you do it once, like that's a pure, like you show it, you own it sort of skill. But after that, like batted ball profiles, batted ball stuff, that's like the hardest to get a good sample for because we just don't have that many of them, right? So it takes longer to get a decent sample. So the ones that stabilize quickest would be like decision value type stats. So that's like strikeout rate, walk rate, those kinds of things. Those become meaningful earlier and it's 50 plate appearances. So we're still about a week away or so for most players.
Well, you talk about this small sample size and how really none of these stats really prove anything yet. Are there any concerns with these underperforming guys? I'll throw some names at you and you can, you know, come up with your own if you have them. But guys like, you know, Marcus Semien, James Wood, Luis Arraez, you know, these guys that are still in the same roles and are getting the playing time that we expected them to do and just are slumping to begin the season.
So sure, there's concern, but it's not necessarily because of anything new, right? Let's take James Wood as an example. I really like James Wood. I think He has a great eye at the plate. I think he's got plenty of power that he can unlock here in the major leagues. He's going to have full run, right, with the Nationals. The problem that we worry about with James Wood is that he's overly passive, that he's going to let too many strikes go. And that's happening right now. That's really where his struggles come in. He's just letting too many strikes go over the heart of the plate, and he's got to attack those. So it's less, you know, it's not so much like I have a new concern. It's, yeah, this is what bad James Wood looks like, right? And that's, it's strangely comforting because it's not a new problem. It's like, okay, he's in this range of outcomes that I expect. And something I mentioned in the Reddit AMA is you gotta, like, rolling charts are extremely helpful right now because it helps you understand. Like right now we see these stats and we're like, oh my God, like he's never been this bad. But in reality, these guys have been this bad, right? They've been this bad before, especially for in a small sample like this. These rolling charts will help you get an idea of like, what is like, what does a hot streak for this player usually look like? Are we in that realm? Or is this player doing truly something different? It's going to be hard to get that out of 30 plate appearances, but you know, it's, so, you know, with James Wood, it's like, okay, this is what I expect. Marcus Semien, I think, you know, I mentioned in the article, I don't have this concern quite yet. I still keep him ranked up there. I do wonder if the thing that makes him the most valuable, which is these plate appearances, like eventually that's a lot of tread on the tires. You know, he's played 700 plate appearances for years and years. And at some point it does catch up with you. Is that this year? Way too soon to tell, but it's a thing that maybe I don't know why I didn't think about it as much before, but now I am kind of like, okay, he's off to a slow start. And now that I think about it, maybe it's just because he's got a lot of miles on the engine, right? And maybe that means that some of that ceiling has come off. There's still going to be times where he's very valuable. I'm certainly not cutting him anywhere, but it is something I'm watching for. You know, and then Luis Arias, he's just a slappy hitter. He relies a lot on balls in play. And that means you've got to like pray to the BABIP gods that things are going to work out. And right now they're not, but again, well within the expected range of outcomes. I'd be worried on Arias if he wasn't Luis Arias, right? Like if for any extended period of time, it was crazy, but as of right now, and let's see, it's Sunday. So I don't know if anything has changed quite yet. Nope. As of right now, he hasn't struck out this year, right? He doesn't have a strikeout. So like, yeah, the WRC plus and everything stinks, but he hasn't struck out. Like he just hasn't. So he's doing Luis Arias things. He's going to be just fine.
So other than Luis Garcia, who we talked about, he's had a significant role change, which is why you dropped him significantly in your list. Are there any other guys that may have dropped from one tier to the next or more than that? The numbers that I'm seeing, really the only guys that have dropped, most of them have dropped because other people have exceeded or, you know, passed them in the list. But I guess the only big numbers I see other than Luis Garcia are Brendan Donovan, who dropped to spot number 123, and then St. Louis Cardinals shortstop Mason Winn, who dropped a tier as well, down to 134.
Yeah, Mason Wynn's the big one that you noticed there. And that is because he is not leading off, right? In fact, the feature guy of this article, Lars Nootbaar, has been the leadoff man for the Redbirds. That's real, like which I love. I think there's a lot of things to like about Lars Nootbaar. We've always been excited about Lars Nootbaar when we get the chance, but role was always a question. Health has always been a question, but right now he's healthy and leading off. So you love that with Lars Nootbaar. But what that means is Mason Winn is not leading off. And Mason Winn, a guy with fairly limited power and speed, like he'll get you the double digits in both, but fairly limited. He really is a guy whose value is tied to where he hit in that lineup. And this isn't a case of like Cedric Mullins from earlier, like, hey, he went from first, but now he's hitting fourth. So, you know, it's fine. Instead of runs, it's RBI. Mason Winn is now hitting ninth, right? And there's two things that happen there. Number one, there's not as many stats to gather when you're hitting ninth. And you lose a significant number of plate appearances moving down to ninth. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's more than you generally think. It can be anywhere from 50 to 100 plate appearances over the course of a year. Just gone. Like they're gone because you're hitting ninth now. and it takes longer for, I mean, you're not even seeing your first at bat till sometimes, you know, the second or third inning. Right. So that's a big one. And that's where we'll see these big drops early on. It's role, as I mentioned before, it's role changes. You see a lot more guys who jump up, but again, often for the same reasons, right? Role change. They've gotten themselves in, you know, they've shaken a platoon, or, you know, like some guys who jump are more just like, I wasn't quite sure what they were. You know, Eugenio Suarez, like, he just sort of was really good at the end of last year. I didn't know what to make of it. Man, he still looks really good. Eugenio Suarez just turns it on in games. And again, I have no idea where this is coming from for him. I don't know what it is that unlocked this power he always had. Again, there was some thought to me that's like, well, the juiced ball is what really kind of like propelled him, and the rest of it is faded. Man, he looks great. So that's a big one. But otherwise, yeah, it's just roles. I will just to, on the point of role, there's one role that continues to blow my mind this year, and it's that Andrés Giménez is the number four hitter for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I'm not saying the Toronto Blue Jays can't have a good season. I'm sure they can. But at no point ever did they think, well, we'll really be set when Andrés Giménez is hitting fourth for us. In fact, no team has ever said that, ever, right? Even when he was a prospect, no team said, oh, I can't wait until we have this guy hitting fourth. But here we are. And it's quite valuable for us as fantasy managers, right? Like all of a sudden, Andrés Giménez isn't batting at the bottom of some lineup. He's hitting fourth behind good players. So I'm kind of curious to see how that works out. But yeah, managers lie to us all spring. And this time of year, the biggest changes you'll see in ranks and the biggest changes that you should be making in your mind is, we thought this guy would have X role, and it turns out he has Y role, and we need to make adjustments for that. I mean, just as a last one, we were told Cam Smith's coming up because he's going to play every day, right? They're like, oh, if we call him up, we're going to play him. He sat, what, three times, at least twice, if not three times now. There's not playing him. And I think they'll keep giving him a shot. It's so hard to go. I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum. It's so hard to do what they're trying to do with Cam Smith, but also like they lie to us. Managers lie to us. They don't feel bad about it. And we need to adjust. And that means just keep an eye on these lineups. Teams are still doing weird things, doing things we didn't expect. And it's a good way to get value early in the season to be like, whoa, we thought this guy was going to hit down here, and now he's hitting up there. Andrés Giménez being a prime example.
Well, we'll talk about some more risers in the ranks, and another guy who has kind of hit way higher in the lineup than we thought he would is Tommy Edman. Tommy Edman batted third the other day for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's been playing middle infield. He's been playing outfield. And I am stoked because I have him just about everywhere, but Edman has also climbed the ranks a little bit in your list. He's jumped from number 134 all the way up to 120. I think that's a tier leap. Edman's been one of those guys that has exceeded expectations in the early going.
Oh, for sure. Like, granted, his OBP is 268, but why walk when you can hit? Right. Yeah. He's hitting the cover off the ball right now. Five home runs already. He only had six last season. Granted, he didn't play that much. Healthy Tommy Edman will probably keep moving up until he's in the 80s or 90s or so. Maybe even a little higher if he stays hot. The question is, how long will he be healthy Tommy Edman? Because I don't really doubt that talent wise, this guy could hit by the end of the season, 20 home runs, steal 25 bases. Like that's not really something I doubt. It's a matter of, will he play enough for that to happen? Right. And there was a time when he was playing lots of games, but of course he missed almost all of 2024. He missed a chunk of 2023. Is that better now? And it might be, it might end up being just a huge value, but yeah, he could move up as high as the 80s. You know what? Maybe even the 70s until, you know, he starts getting slowed down in his jumps. But to get up there, really, it's just going to be a matter of are you hitting it all? And are you still healthy? And better yet, are you hitting closer to the middle of the lineup for those Dodgers? So that's really what we're looking at with him. But yeah, great call by you, man. It's not just going to be a hot start. I think he's going to be a great value throughout the rest of the season as long as he's healthy.
Well, we go with a guy that I kind of planted my flag on preseason to a guy that you planted your flag on, and that's Spencer Torkelson, Detroit Tigers first baseman. Torkelson has been on fire to start the season. You have reflected that in your ranks, moving him from 137 all the way up to 116. That's a two-tier jump. Scott, take your victory lap on Spencer Torkelson.
Yeah, get torqued, nerds. Woo! I love Torque. Walked it off today for the Tigers Sunday to beat those pesky White Sox after the Tigers got absolutely dismantled by, you know, legend Martin Perez. So it was great to see him do that. Look, the way the pendulum has swung for Torkelson is massive, right? Because coming into the season, we're told that Colt Keith is going to be the first baseman. Torque doesn't even have a place on this team to start out, right? Which, you know, was sort of well deserved. He did not play well last season, but he is, you know, only a little over a season removed from a 30 home run year, right? And so I think we were quick to forget about that, but he's been given this opportunity. He is doing all the things that you want Torkelson to do. This isn't a case of just like, oh, well, he's getting some success, but it's because he's, you know, striking out a ton. Like, he is striking out, but he's like walking along with it. He's putting the ball up in the air. He's doing all the things that we need Torque to do. Could he do more of it? Absolutely. But for now, right, like, we're really happy with this. And if I think Torque is going to win this job for the rest of the year, I think projections are still being a little slow on that. And if he does, he's a big threat to get to 30 home runs. The batting average may not be fantastic, but I think it'll be better than the 220s that we've seen projected for him. I think he's better than all those things. So, you know, this guy was a top prospect for a reason. He's one of the best college hitters from the last decade. I think he can do this, right? Especially if he keeps walking. Like, he doesn't need to walk quite this much, but yeah, it's all good things. It's all exactly what I wanted to see. Right. He got ranked because I thought if he does these things, I could jump him up. He did them. Right. I know it's only a week and a half, but I'm going to, in that part of the list that like really like the one from the, like the one third, the 120s, the 130s, you can see guys take big jumps because they're sort of blended in with these. What was the phrase from the offseason? Oatmeal guys, right? Like the JJ Blades of the world who, you know, do have a role to play, but in a 12 team league, you're looking for upside, right? And Spencer Torkelson has 30 home run, 250 average upside. And that is hard to find for a guy who was probably on the wire right up until the season started. So that's why he gets that jump. That's what you should be excited about. That's really, I mean, what we're after this time of year is where are those guys? Right, where are those guys that have not that aren't just hot, but have upside to be someone that really sticks around all season long? Because some of these guys that are hot right now are not that, right? Some of them are just they're limited hitters who are just hot for a week, and guys get hot for a week all the time, right? I talk about anyone who's in the major leagues can have 50 plate appearances where they are just amazing, right? Anyone, right? Aristides Aquino can come out. He was a major league caliber player. He could come out and set records hitting home runs, right? The question is, can they make adjustments after that happens to stick, right? That's where we see the other real questions. And that's where, I mean, that's what I want to see with Torkelson. It's also, you know, it's something that I don't worry about with Edmund. I've seen him make adjustments many times, so it's not a concern there. But other players, not always quite as confident. Very interested in what Willier Abreu is doing because he's a very aggressive hitter and he's walked a bunch to start the year. So that's something different I'm very interested in seeing. But other guys who've started the year hot, like Geraldo Perdomo is exactly what I thought he is. And his hot streak right now is just you know, like he's got one home run. He doesn't really have very many walks or strikeouts. He puts the ball in play. Yep, that's normal for him. And he's hitting for a high average, which, yes, that's normal for him. So that's just a hot version of Geraldo Perdomo. Ditto like Sal Frelick. Like nothing new here that really like that you can really get interested in. I think the guy that everyone is asking me about and who, you know, may or may not be going on the IL soon, I don't think we know quite yet. That's Ivan Herrera. That's the one that's a little different. Herrera, a guy who, as Kyle Bland pointed out, our process metrics just loved Ivan Herrera last year. And, you know, he's got four home runs. Granted, three of them come in the same game. Dude was just dialed in. And one big game right now makes a whole stat line, right? Your whole stat line can come from one game and still carry you. It can carry you for 2 weeks, really. So how much he carries over, I'm not sure. I think the thing I want to talk about with Herrera is, again, it is for Herrera 22, I think with today, 23 plate appearances. Please don't cut your top seven catchers, right? Like I got a lot of, you know, if you drafted Wilson Contreras, who's off to a slow start, just wait it out. Like don't swap him, you know, like play the safe move. I know you're going to be like, oh, I can't, but Herrera is just out there and someone should scoop him. You know, maybe someone in your league probably does need Ivan Herrera, but it's not you. If you have Wilson Contreras, if you have, you know, Shea Langeliers is still in that tier. Now, if you started the year and you drafted, oh, Alejandro Kirk, yes, make the swap. Make those swaps for the guys that were in that, like, last couple catchers off the board, just trying to stream a little bit to start, maybe had some upside. Those are the guys that should be, like, those are the players, the managers that should be thinking Ivan Herrera now, right? Ride the hot streak, see if I've got something that sticks. But even if Herrera has, like, this great season that, you know, his upper-level projection season, we're talking about maybe one of the top seven catchers in the league. Maybe, right? So you don't cut a guy who's already there for a guy who might get there. Right. That's the perspective you got to keep when you're looking at some of these hot starts.
Right. And the concept is evergreen, right? That concept that you're talking about applies across the board, not just to, you know, this specific player. Ivan Herrera will go on the IL beginning tomorrow. But like you said, we can't just go with the shiny object that's performing well and drop the sure thing, or at least the proven thing. Maybe not the sure thing, but the proven thing. Another catcher who has popped off so far in the first 10 days of the season, Hunter Goodman out in Colorado. He's catcher eligible in almost all formats. He has DH'd almost as much as he's caught, which is great for managers who are looking for extra volume. You want to touch on Goodman real quick?
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer that he's been not very good in Colorado so far. Something to note is that the Coors effect actually goes both ways. So it really hurts hitters as they leave Coors because balls all of a sudden move like 1 to 2 inches more than they did a day before. Right. So you have the read down. You're like, yeah, that's a slider. And you miss it because it moved more than they did when you were up in the mountains. It happens the other way too, where they don't, you know, you're up there and you've been playing at sea level. And then all of a sudden, you know, the ball's not moving as much, you miss it. Right. I mean, it's, if you like way oversimplify, it's sort of like the changeup effect, right? I knew exactly where it was going to be, but I swung right through it because I missed the timing. Only now it's the location. Breaking balls aren't going to move as much and they're not going to just immediately jump on that all the time. So there is a bit of adjustment that happens there. Our issue with Hunter Goodman coming into the season is he going to play enough? We were wondering that. We weren't sure what kind of role he'd carve out, but he appears to be both a 50% catcher and, you know, a DH when he's not catching pretty much all the time. He hasn't sat this week. He didn't sit for the whole week. That's huge. So he should definitely be scooped even with this, you know, less than exciting couple of days in Coors so far. Again, not a guy that I'm dropping one of those top seven or eight catchers for. But if I started out with the Alejandro Kirks of the world, or just really, you know, again, last pick catcher kind of thing, that's when you go in. Goodman, unlikely to be super helpful in ratios over the course of a season. He almost never walks. He's very aggressive. He's going to be up and down, but he does hit the ball hard enough, right? He barrels it up plenty. We saw that last year. We've already started to see it this year. Even with the batting average, it's probably going to be closer to 200 than 230 throughout the course of the season, or, you know, maybe better. He only hit 190 last year in 70 games. He won't help you there, but there'll be plenty of home runs, especially as a catcher. He's a definite difference maker in 12-team leagues. If you can't start him at catcher, he's interesting, but less so, because I'm not sure he's that much better than in like a standard 12-team league than the other outfielders you might find, but he's a good streamer if you can only play him in the outfield.
And last but not least, we'll touch on rookie second baseman from Boston, Christian Campbell, who's had a nice start to his career. He made the team. Boston kind of forced their hand and everybody else's hand and stuck him in at second base, even when his spring numbers didn't necessarily dictate it. And he has proved the Red Sox management right so far. What are your thoughts on Christian Campbell and maybe what his hot start means for the rest of the season?
Well, I mean, I think the overall projection on him is still about the same, right? Upside is maybe like a 2020 season right now, 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases. More likely, you know, I'd probably start at like 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases with good ratios and hope to see if I can get a little bit more juice. Either way, he's a very, very startable second baseman. And I think the thing to point out here, it was him and Cam Smith that we talked about a lot in the preseason. And as far as spring numbers go, Cam Smith's were way better. However, there's a big difference here in that Boston knew what they had in Christian Campbell. They've been watching Christian Campbell since they got him back in 2023, right? Like he was a draft pick for them in 2023. They had him at the complex. He played, you know, just 22 games that first year. He played 115 games with them last year. They've had eyes on him. They know exactly what they're dealing with. They knew he was ready for the show. I think what's been challenging for Cam Smith is the Astros just got that kid in the offseason, right? Like they didn't draft him. Like they traded for him. Like I understand why they're excited about what they have in Cam Smith, but they didn't have the benefit that the Red Sox had, which is seeing this guy over the course of, you know, one partial season and one full season and getting to coach him and get him ready for the major leagues. So I think he's really benefiting from that. Now, again, these numbers aren't going to quite be the same. I think the walk rate is going to stay in the double digits. I think the strikeout rate can stay around 20%. You know, BABIP is an oversimplified stat, but 474 doesn't stick around, right? Like it just, that's a hard number to do for more than what 33 plate appearances that he has. It's really hard to keep a BABIP that high. It's going to go actually just as of today's action so far, it's already down to 417. Cause he's got one hit in nine plate appearances. But yeah, I think he's definitely a plus guy. I think he's another player that's going to keep kind of moving up. He doesn't have that top end power, that top end speed, but he's going to contribute across the board and give you good ratios. It's not as flashy as you think it would be for a prospect making the team and doing all this stuff, but it's flashy enough for a 12-team league where he is absolutely a set and forget kind of player at second.
Well, we talked about the flashy players. Let's talk about maybe one guy that's – give me one name that's flown under the radar so far that you're looking to maybe either scoop off the waiver wire or maybe offer his fantasy manager a buy low kind of offer in your leagues.
Well, I think the buy lows are tough. I generally would tell anybody not to sell right now a player that they have because you're almost always going to get the wrong value. But if you have players in your league that are getting antsy, you definitely want to target the guys who are doing everything they should be doing, but the results aren't there yet. like, for example, Yandy Diaz is not broken. There's nothing wrong with him. It's just a slow start. So that's definitely a player. Like, he's getting cut everywhere. So my first one is less about picking up guys who've had a hot start, and it's picking up the guys that are getting cut that shouldn't have been cut. That's where I'm really making a lot of moves in leagues right now. So the, you know, Yandy Diaz, Mark Vientos, those guys get cut in these leagues for no particularly good reason besides they're starting slow. So be ready to scoop those and sit on them. Those are a much better gamble than some of these guys who only have a hot start. Now, for the guys with a hot start, you know, I know I got a lot of questions on Ben Rice. He's worth a look. I'm very interested to see if Ben Rice can make an adjustment. We already saw him do this once, right? We saw Ben Rice go off last year when he had catcher eligibility and wasn't able to keep it up. So I'm not sure how I feel about that. Jacob Wilson, shortstop for the Athletics. I think he's a really interesting one. He doesn't have a walk or a strikeout yet. He might've had one today, but he's not a flashy guy, but he puts the ball in play. He's gonna do good things. Oh, he did have two strikeouts today, so he finally is on the board for strikeouts at a 5.4% rate. But he's a guy who could hit like 15 to 20 home runs with a high average, right? It's mostly ratios for him, but I think there might be something interesting there if you want to ride a hot streak, figure it out. Same for his teammate, Tyler Soderstrom. I think Soderstrom is a guy who got a ton of power. Let's see if he can avoid the 200 batting average kind of thing. He's sort of like what I want. You know, when I talk about torque, I say, hey, this is what I think he could be. Soderstrom's that, except he hasn't done it before, right? Torque did it once already. So there's a bit more comfort in making that projection. Soderstrom's the type where it's like, he could do that, but we haven't actually seen it over the course of a whole season. So that's one. But again, can't stress enough, the main ads you're making right now are the guys who are getting dropped for the hot players on the wire. Keep an eye on those. Many people are going to make a mistake and you should go after it. Chasing things that maybe they shouldn't be chasing yet. A good example of this would be Jordan Walker. So Jordan Walker is off to a fairly good start on the season. You know, through today's actions, you know, he's got two hits and nine plate appearances today. He's hitting 286, right? But keep in mind, he's slugging. just today, he's slugging 286. But yeah, on the season, he's hitting 310, slugging 414. Those aren't great numbers. And it's all ground balls, guys. It's almost 60% ground balls for Jordan Walker. That's been the problem the whole time. He's getting some success, but he hasn't fixed the problem. The problem being he never hits line drives. He just hits a bunch of ground balls, right? And he can't survive like that, especially because he doesn't pull the ball that much. So like I would say, it's a wait and see on Jordan Walker because he's doing all this stuff. We've seen him be hot before, but he hasn't fixed the ground ball problem. So I don't expect him to be any better than he's been in the past. So I'm a little worried about that, but people are going to be dropping legitimate players for him that maybe just haven't gotten off to a good start yet. Scoop them up. I can't say exactly who it is because I'm not in your leagues. I don't know, but it's going to be guys who are full-time players who we shouldn't, you know, we don't have any reason to believe that their projection should be any different than it was before, right? Like, I would not be shocked. I think one of the more interesting names in this bucket is going to be Jake Berger. Jake Berger, we thought was going to hit third or fourth. He's hitting like sixth now. He's off to a bit of a slow start, but that's because he's Jake Berger. That's what he does. I think he's a player I'd be quite interested in because he could have legitimate power. And I rank him higher than Torque. I rank him higher than Ben Rice. I rank him higher than those guys because he's just more of a proven asset. I think projections are still going to tell you Jake Berger's the play there, but he's not going to get the hype on your wire, right? That Ben Rice and Torque are. So just keep an eye on those players. Go after those players. Taylor Ward, Alec Bohm. These are guys with slow starts you should be going to get. I know there's a couple leagues where Lewis Robert Jr. has been cut, and I get it. He's incredibly volatile. But he's as good of a bet as anyone to sit on your bench for a week or two to see what you can get out of him because he has extreme talent, more so than the other guys that are sort of on a hot streak to start the season. So that's what you should be doing right now. That's how you can get ahead It's not going to be some of these like names that, you know, we didn't really expect to be doing anything and that may not be doing anything in 2 weeks. It's the guys that we spent all offseason talking about and what their path to success looks like. No one's path to success required them to be good for the first 30 to 40 plate appearances. None, right? There's no player that was true. So go out and get those guys if they've been cut.
Yeah, we're only 5% of the way through the MLB season. We are 5% of the way through most players' plate appearances. So if anybody's projected for 600 plate appearances, they've only had 30. That's only 5%. So just stay the course. Keep your guys, stay the course and let them do their thing, I think is what Scott's been getting at for the, you know, really the course of the whole podcast.
I mean, it is. It's a lot of talking to make a very simple point. It's like very few players have showed us that what we thought about them in the winter is completely false, right? That just hasn't happened. So just don't worry about it. Like there's a lot of folks that were worried about Jackson Churio. He has that golden sombrero to start the season. I'm sure maybe it was a bit of nerves. He's leading off opening day, a role that he's probably going to hold for quite some time. It didn't go great. But, you know, he hit two home runs today, hit one yesterday. I mean, he's turning it around pretty quick, folks, because that's what he is. He's the guy we thought he was, right? It just was a slow start. Like, that's okay. It could be slow for another week, and I would be fine with it. You know what I mean? Like, it's 14 strikeouts.
Yeah, totally. I think we can summarize pretty much all of our fantasy advice right now in really one trending meme, and that's the hold up, let him cook. Like,
give it time, guys.
Let him cook.
Give it time. Now, again, that doesn't mean like you shouldn't do anything, but those you picked a couple guys with your last couple of picks. Those are the ones you're cutting for the Ben Rices, the Spencer Torkelsons, the Jacob Wilsons of the world, right? Those are the guys you're letting go. You're not letting go the guys you took with your first 12, 13 picks. Right? Because those guys, like, let them cook, give them time to be who they are. I really haven't encountered very many players who are so bad right now that I'm like, you aren't what I thought you were, unless I thought they were going to be bad. Right? There is a chunk of players who are in that boat who are still just proving us right. Those projections are valuable for a good reason. Nathaniel Lowe is not going to strike out 51.5% of the time. It's not going to keep happening, but he's hot right now. He's swinging the bat hard. He'll get there, right? Rafael Devers. Jazz Chisholm is striking out a ton for all his home runs, right? Austin Riley's off to a slow start. Like that's okay. It's totally fine. Like let that go, right? I'm not worried about any of those guys. Even Trevor Story, who has like no walks and a bunch of strikeouts. Yeah, I know. That's what I thought he'd be. He's also got two home runs and two stolen bases. That's what you drafted him for. You drafted him for a volatile batting line, but power and speed. There's no like, well, are you worried about? No, I'm not, because he's doing exactly what I thought he was going to do. It just looks a little extreme right now because it's a very small snapshot.
So this is a great comment from YouTube that kind of summarizes what question I was about to ask. Someone said, everyone preaches patience, but every year there are studs that bust and unknown young players that break out and end up making a difference. So how do we differentiate between, you know, the guys that we drafted and we think we're going to do well versus, you know, basically how do we decide who to hang on to and who to cut?
First of all, I just realized I can see the comments on YouTube. It's cool that people are here. I don't think I've ever done that. Like usually I have one audience member and it's the other guy doing the podcast. So this is fun, but, a good point here that like, you know, practicing patience is harder than it sounds. And it's less about saying, don't make any moves. I think that's the wrong interpretation of what we're trying to say. Like when we say, let them cook, we're talking about the guys that you drafted with real expectations, right? Every draft you had your solid picks, those first, you know, that core roster that you built, and then you took flyers. The flyers, that's where you do the burn and churn to find those breakouts, to take chances on those breakouts. And sometimes you're going to cut a guy who ends up breaking out later. Like, that stuff's okay. That's where you're allowed to do this, right? Like, Nick talks about this a lot. The last couple picks in his drafts were the guy, like, were for streaming pitchers, were the ones that had good matchups early, right? Because they faced the White Sox, they faced, you know, some bad offense, they faced the Rockies on the road. Those are the team, like, those are the guys that are also getting cut when he's like, oh, maybe Jordan's Hicks. Yeah, I haven't listened to him recently, but like, if Jordan Hicks is interesting to you, those are the guys you cut, right? Don't use performance on your team so far to be the judge of who you're going to cut. Save that for the month of May, right? Right now, what you're using is where, like, what guys I pick up, even if they're off to a little bit of a hot start, right? If their upside isn't that high, that's what I'm trying to swap out, right? The back end of your roster, keep burning and churning that. You're going to do that all year till you have something that truly sticks. That's where all that comes in. You got to leave the top part of your lineup alone.
Thanks for joining Hacks and Jacks. We'll be back next week with more hitters. For Scott Chu, I'm Brett Ford. We'll see you next week. This MG Drum taking us out.